This week's episode of The Chirp with Darren Millard touches the four corners of the emotional world as part of an incredibly entertaining second round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. My buddy Nick Kypreos, when he played, could be nice, score goals, or get nasty, making him the perfect person to talk Edmonton, Vegas, and then the Toronto stumble. It's The Chirp with Darren Millard, and listen for the Kypreisms at the end.
Boys, I'm Mike today. Just let everyone know, don't say anything stupid.
Heads up!
Oh, how'd that feel, old man?
That's a disgrace! That's a disgrace! What a joke!
I'm gonna run you, I'm just waiting for my shift!
Hard to make sense of the second round, so that's why we bring in the voice of reason, Nick Kypreos. This is how crazy the second round has been. I never thought I would say voice of reason, Nick Kypreos.
No, Scott Morrison, voice of reason.
Yes. But not Nick Kypreos. But I need you. I need you right now. You're coming from your regular Thursday skate that's been around forever. What was the main topic coming off of the Leafs staying alive and then the nastiness between Vegas and Edmonton?
Yeah, all of the above. And it all depends on how early you get into the dressing room when the chirping starts, right? No different. Men's league, NHL, minor hockey. It's fun. It really is. And, you know, we're in Toronto here in the hub of the hockey world. So first and foremost, Stanley Cup playoffs. So, yeah, a lot of Toronto and Florida. But obviously people are watching that series against Vegas and Edmonton and how dirty it is, how chippy it is, and the fight right to the end. And the one thing, Darren, the voice of reason can tell you here is that, you know, despite what the score is in a best of seven, you're always playing to send that next message to the next game. And Vegas did that. We'll see what happens with Pietrangelo and his slash. But there's a carryover. And in many ways, this series is only just getting started.
It has to be determined. Pietrangelo's got the hearing with player safety. Then you've got Darnell Nurse with the instigator in the last 5 minutes, which is also automatically reviewed. What would you do with those two players going forward? Take them both out, let one play, or let both play?
Yeah, I'm more into letting the guys decide here. And I don't mean to say that, you know, all bets are off in the asylum's running the prison here. But I didn't see enough for me. And I do factor in if Draisaitl's hurt or can't play the next game, or now he's out with a fractured wrist. No indications that that's the case. It probably looked worse than it is. 5 minute majors are a big penalty to take. And, you know, I know it was at the end of the game and it really didn't matter, but the fact that he's not hurt would play a big part in me deciding whether or not I should suspend him or not. And I'd have Nurse and Pietrangelo back in for the next game and sit back and relax and enjoy it and have some fun watching it.
Well, let's get back to that series, because we really wanted to talk to you about Toronto and that situation. They end up staying alive. Where are you on how they got into this hole?
Well, I just think that when you talk about this time of year, you have to have a new level of intensity. And Leafs haven't really shown that. Even in the Tampa Bay series, if you really watch beginning to end on all six games, there's an argument to say that Tampa Bay did outplay the Leafs, and the lack of intensity at times for the Leafs has been really, really prominent. And it was prominent in the first three games. The forecheck of Florida really enabled them to come in and take a 3-0 lead. For the first time in the series last night, we didn't see Florida spend nearly as much time in the Toronto zone. Toronto had clear outs. They were able to sustain their own forecheck on Bobrovsky, which led probably to the Marner a goal that gave them some breathing room. And now it feels like it's more evenly tilted. And the Leafs are going to have to push that much harder in Game 5 at home. And again, show a better forecheck like they did in Game 3 or I'm sorry, game four to extend this series.
By winning a round, there is a lot of relief in Toronto. Does that all get wiped out by a quick series against Florida?
Yeah, it does. Really does. And sometimes the stars have to align for you. In 94, the year we won the cup, I mean, we dominated those first two rounds against the Islanders in Washington. But, you know, this was still the heyday of the Pittsburgh Penguins, Darren, where, you know, I think that year Mario was limited to maybe, you know, 25 games. But he was back and proven every bit of being a dangerous player. You factor in Jágr, you factor in Bourassa in his prime. And it was a big deal for Washington to knock out Pittsburgh that year, enabled us to have a clear path to a conference final against New Jersey. Now you're looking at the Leafs this year, and no Tampa Bay and no Boston, and you've got the Florida Panthers as the eighth seed who crawled in to the playoffs, keeping you away from a conference final here. And that's not a pill that Leaf fans want to swallow here, that we got Boston and Tampa Bay out of the way and we couldn't get past Florida. So all bets are off on what the Leafs were able to do against Tampa Bay. And really, people were expecting the Leafs to be up 3-1, not the other way around.
So how does it change if the series is extended? And I wouldn't put it past a miracle comeback, given the talent of the Toronto Maple Leafs. Very slim chances. But if you can even just push it to a 6 or a 7, does it change things?
Without a doubt. No question. If I'm the Florida Panthers, I'm pissed off right now. I got to pack my bags and go back up to Toronto. I gotta clear customs. I gotta check into a hotel that maybe
you guys make customs sound like it's walking across the Sahara.
Hey, listen, I don't like it either way. So it's just time consuming, put it that way. They would love dearly to have a few days off and get ready for a conference final. And now to lose another game at home, or lose another game on the road, and then to come back in a 6 or 7 scenario, it does put a ton of pressure on the Florida Panthers here. And, you know, the Leafs have got a little bit of a rallying point here. It's still slim, but it's a lot better than being on the outside looking in. And they've got this kid, Joseph Woll, now, who I believe structurally and fundamentally is their best goalie.
Yeah.
Matt Murray and Samsonov. He's way more consistent with his movements and his looks, and he could be alone a rallying point for this hockey club.
Are you like looking at a Patrick Waugh, at Matt Murray back in Pittsburgh, a Steve Penny back in the day?
Bennington, St. Yeah. Louis.
Yeah.
Again, not probable, but not impossible. Let's put it this way. And, you know, there's something to be said. I was on Sportsnet Central last night, and I threw this out to Ken Reed, and I'll throw it out to you. Is the game structured now today than it was maybe even 15 years ago, 20 years ago, for teams to come back from 3-0 deficits now than it was back then? I tend to say yes. We've seen two of them in what, the last 20 years. So is the game shaped up with the rules and the salary caps and the balance of teams always having being vulnerable in one area of their game more open for teams to come back? We've seen in the regular season, to steal a phrase from Jack Hughes, teams go on a heater. I mean, we're only talking about a 4-game winning streak, Darren. We're not asking you to put an 8 or 9 one together to come back from 3-0. So, hey, listen, plant the seed of doubt. And that's what the Leafs were able to do in game four.
When you were playing and somebody said they're on a heater, what would you have thought they were talking about?
They sat on a radiator. Do people under 30 know what a radiator is, Darren?
It's the hot water tank that you can't get water out of that's really hot. That's a great one. Satin right here. Would you play for Rod Brind'Amour?
I don't know who wouldn't. Rod, yeah. The Bod, in many ways, I think he'll always look at him as a player first. And he coaches like he would be on the other end receiving either instructions or encouragement. I think he's proven to be the best modern day players coach that we've seen in a long, long time. So it's great. They talk about adversity, talk about stars and scores, and Svechnikov and Pacioretty going down, and they're still finding a way. It's
three different goalies.
That's fun story to see.
I watch them. And I see the passion in him. And then we've talked to him a couple of times on the Chirp. I want to play for him.
Yeah.
I could see, I've never heard of this before, but a player signing to play for a coach, I could see that at some point with that guy.
Well, again, you want to win. This guy's done it. He's been there. Star player. At times, the hardest working guy for sure on a hockey club. He's done it. He's seen it all. And the greatest thing about him is he's a motivator. He can get you going. He can find ways to help you win. And that's what this time of the year is all about.
Did you see him as a coach when you played against him? And could you work out with him?
I was pretty good in my heyday.
I know.
Won a ton of awards.
You were right in there. Yeah. The stories of you and Tim Kerr and all that kind of stuff. And that's not a joke comment.
No. But it didn't sound good when you said Nick the Bod, right? It doesn't roll as well. So Rod the Bod, that's like, you know, you could sell cars or candy bars with Rod the Bod.
Would you like to work out with him?
No, not anymore.
No?
I just get off the ice with Lindros and Thomas Cabrera and those type of guys, and I'm exhausted right now. I got to be honest with you.
Is Big E still doing drills when you guys go out for your Thursday skate?
Oh, yeah. No, without a doubt. And his backhand's still harder than my slap shot.
It's incredible, isn't it, that backhand?
Yes. And there's a few more LBs behind it now.
On the Vegas-Edmonton front, we knew it was going to be a dynamic series, Kip. We didn't know it was going to be nasty. Why has it been so mean?
Well, I think when you have a guy like Evander Kane in the lineup where you just don't know what he's going to do, and we saw it earlier in the series with the cross check against Pietrangelo, and he's a payback type of guy, the type of guy that has a long memory, and you just have to be on your toes with him out there. Once you have a guy like that, the fuses get shorter and shorter on the ice. And it's like a snowball effect. Like Pietrangelo, I've never seen him more challenged. I've never seen him with a shorter fuse as well. He's got great pushback. He's going to another level emotionally in his game that I don't think we ever saw, including covering him in St. Louis when they won the cup. And he's getting pressed big time. And, you know, so is Mark Stone coming off that back surgery. And they're attacking. You know, some people think it's too vicious. Some people think it's ugly hockey. I love it, man. Give me more.
Well, I don't think anybody in Vegas is surprised that teams would target Mark Stone in the back, right? You know that going in as a player.
Listen, I've sat in enough meetings as a player, and it's night and day. First of all, let me just say to your watchers and your listeners that when you're playing three and four nights and you got 24 hours to prep for a team, I mean, it's a 4-minute meeting. Mm-hmm. You prep for a team that you're going to play a best of seven from, and you're talking about weeks of prep, and you're talking about a playbook this thick on each player, on every strength and weakness, mentally, physically, and emotionally. So that takes this series to another level. And like I said, when you have some guys that can push it and you're mentally pushed to the limit, it can make guys do different things out on the ice that they're not normally accustomed to. And it's the ones that can manage their emotions outside their comfort zone right now that might make the difference between winning and losing this series.
Some guys are harder to take their number than others, correct?
Yeah, but you have to. We watched.
But Kane's a tougher one to walk away from.
I know. But there's a thing called managing the clock, too. Where are you? Are you down 4-1 that you want to send a message to the next game? Or is the game still on the line and you just might have to take a number? Well, we saw a really heavy hit last night from Gudas on David Kampf in the corner. I don't know if you saw it, but he absolutely plastered him. And, some people were saying that's a 5-minute boarding. He should be suspended. He tried to hurt him. Or at the end of the day, was it just a hard hit where you tip your hat to him and say, hey, you got my number. Next one, I'm coming after you.
Gudas is a tough guy to take a number of because you want to get right back in there. That's a great comparison with the Evander Kane situation. The Rangers make a change at coach. Were you surprised?
No. And, this is a team that needs to win now as well. When you talk about where they are with their salary cap and the payouts to Panarin, Zibanejad, and now Adam Fox. They're not patient there. They never have been. Yes, they retooled the last few years just to move some old money out, like Lundqvist. Shesterkin came in there almost seamlessly to take over. But there's a ton of pressure on the Rangers to win now. So we'll see where Chris Drury goes from here.
But like a couple of 100-point seasons, back-to-back playoffs, you're losing 7 games. I thought that was a little bit of a quick snap to get rid of Gerard Glenn.
Yeah, I don't disagree. And on the surface, you're right. But Darren, behind the scenes, and you've been around the game long enough, if there is a difference in philosophy, it's not about 105 or 110 points. It just might be a way that Gerard looks at the game or challenges certain players to perform and whether he has the support of others around him. And he didn't have the support of Chris Drury. If you're general manager or president, they're not on board with what you're doing behind the bench, then it doesn't matter if you've got 80 points or 120. It really doesn't. There was a clear disconnect between Gerard and Chris Drury, and Chris had to make that decision to move forward.
Have you told this to Doug McLean, your buddy?
Doug's, just between me and you, and yeah. don't ever say this to Mac.
Well, Bob's listening too, so it's between you, me, and Bob.
Yes,
Bender.
Me, you, and Bob can just talk amongst ourselves and say that Mac's a smart guy. He knows.
Really? Have you ever told him that he's a smart guy too?
No, I'd never admit that.
Voice of reason and Mac's a smart guy. Like this is unprecedented territory that we're in right now. I agree with you. Gerard sounded resigned at his press conference after the series. And it looked like it was going that way. So the disconnect is right on point. Connor Bedard going to Chicago. Perfect situation for the National Hockey League.
Yes.
Don't listen to me, Columbus or Anaheim.
Yes, without a doubt. A major market, a market that the league needs back in contention. It's been a tough 6 years there. I know they upset Edmonton, I think, in the bubble on a technically, I don't even think they made the playoffs that year.
Right. Yeah.
In a pre,
it was the
whatever
play-in
you wanted. Yeah. Whatever. Just been a tough 6 years, and that's a market that the National Hockey League needs and has to have as a strength point. And Connor will start that process.
If Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane should they rethink their futures with the Chicago Blackhawks?
I don't think they're going to let them, to be honest with you.
Oh, really?
I think based on how we saw this whole thing play out, Darren, I'll be shocked, absolutely shocked. Number one, that they would want them back, and number two, that both of them would go back. I don't think an 18-year-old kid, as good as Connor Bedard is, changes anything.
Really?
Really. It's over. Okay. Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane, it's over. Move on. They didn't want you the last year and a half, 2 years. They waited it out to the point where they didn't even get any value back for them, real value. And it's just an ugly end to two of the greatest faces in franchise history. Connor Bedard can't save that relationship.
I'm trying to think here. You said ugly end to two of the greatest faces in franchise history. Were you talking about you and I in our previous stop?
At Sportsnet?
Yeah. Were you talking about that? Or were you talking about Toews and Kane? I'm confused right now.
Yeah. It doesn't take much for a goalie to be confused.
But we were two of the greatest faces in franchise history.
That was yesterday. Let's try to build something here on the chirp.
Voice of reason. I'm proud of you for bringing me this. Would you like to be in that final three games, if it goes that far, of Edmonton-Vegas?
Oh, my God. It'd be perfect hockey for me.
Yeah.
Absolutely perfect hockey. And it might, Darren, just to go back to your point, it might be the team that could bite their lip and show the discipline of not getting sucked in or not overdrawing on your emotions here. And that's as much a part of a game, a series, winning a Stanley Cup is shooting, passing, and scoring is who can show the discipline. We know what the power play can mean to the Edmonton Oilers. Can Vegas show the discipline that they showed earlier? Remains to be seen. But I love that emotional part of the game where players get challenged.
Did you score this morning on your skate?
I had two of the best helpers you'd ever seen.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Who finished for you?
The Big E did.
Oh, setting up Big E.
I'm not dumb, man. I'm not playing against that guy. That guy accidentally breathes on me. He's going to separate my shoulder.
Are you always on his team every Thursday
always.
Morning?
Always. I'm not dumb. I'm not accidentally bumping into him. I'm out 6 weeks.
We like to play a game, Kippyisms. You ready for the two today?
Oh, gosh. What do you got for me?
This is fun. We've always done this. Bite your lip. I think it's bite your tongue.
Yes. You're not wrong on any of these.
Okay.
Blind dogs lie.
It's so depressed he jumps over a bridge. And the other one was asylum running the prison. I think it's prison running the asylum.
I don't know what order I use, though. Can we can we go back to the tape?
I'll look back at it. I will, and I will admit if I'm wrong, okay? I promise.
I have a sneaking suspicion it probably is me that's wrong, but go back to the tape.
Those sticks behind you are awesome, and the book is still available. Please pick it up. Nick Kiprios joins us.
And Little Buddha's coming to the U.S. We've got in California. We've got it in Texas and Florida, and I hope Nevada soon would be really cool.
Let's pump that.
Yeah, it's Total Wine will be the distributor.
Yeah,
and we're thrilled. We should have it at Total Wine in Florida, Texas, and California within the next couple of weeks.
Attaboy, good job to you and Emery. Right. That's awesome. Yeah. Thanks, buddy.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Oh, Kippy, we're both wrong. All right. Producer Bob, listen to the show. Make sure that we're factually correct. Just told me inmates running the asylum. So we're both wrong. I got a Kippyism. I kind of feel part of the club. We've kept track of those over the years. I always said when I write my book, I'm going to have a chapter of Kippyisms. I just haven't been able to get around to writing that book like Nick, world-renowned author, and what a great book. It's been out for a couple of years now. You got to check it out. A really cool story about his journey in the National Hockey League. Goes back to breaking in. Just a star-studded junior career, 60-plus goals, and then finding his way in the National Hockey League. Scored so many goals. I think he was a 20-goal scorer. I want to make sure that I'm correct on this. 20-goal scorer with the Hartford Whalers, none on the power play. That's how good he was at finishing. And love that he's still out there skating on that Thursday twirl with Eric Lindros, Big E, and there's always a few former National Hockey Leaguers at times. And this is a skate, by the way, this Thursday skate that they've got going. I was a part of back when I lived in the area, but it really goes back to a stoppage, work stoppage, way back when, and they had it going during that time. And when Big E stepped down or retired, he got the guys back together, and it's just a fun skate. But Kipper's right in the sense that they do drills. The warm-up is some actual drills for Eric. He loves doing drills, not just a pickup skate, but getting out there and doing some passing drills out of the corner. Love the ones out of the corner, and that backhand is just absolutely legendary. And at times you do the one-handed backhand, and you're like, that physically is not possible for him to get that much on it. We should reconnect with E, get him on the Chirp podcast, and I guarantee you, there's a funny story they'll tell you. We were doing an interview one time. It was before he was dealt from Philadelphia, and he was not playing at the time. And I said, what about so-and-so team? And it wasn't a team that was in contention. And we were sitting on a park bench in downtown Toronto going over this interview. And he said, in very calm terms, just said, and as his answer, I don't know whether that's going to happen. And what if I just hit you in the head with a puck? And that was his way of saying, because we were skating at the time during his time away from the game. And I thought, well, I guess we won't be using that clip. It was a fun interaction, a fun twist. Great guy. Loved all my time with Eric Lindros, whether it's downtown having some fun or whether it's on the ice or watching him play. What a power guy. We got to get him on. Just reminds me again how funny the guy can be. And that laugh, he uses it as such a weapon when you're interviewing. And when he comes on, you'll have to listen for it. When I ask him something that he doesn't really want to answer, he'll give me that laugh, which is my cue to just move on. Messier is great at it too. He can use that that laugh as a way to control a conversation. We know that that the Kippyisms, by the way, inmates running the asylum and all that kind of stuff, are fun. Two peas in a pot was a great one back in the day, and at some point we'll get to it. Want to mention that the Norris Trophy finalists were released, and Erik Karlsson is among them. He will win the Norris Trophy. There's a little bit of controversy, because not often a player wins the Norris Trophy without making the playoffs. Adam Fox, New York Rangers, a couple of years ago. There's some debate about whether Karlsson should have been a finalist. And I just want to point out that the 10 Ted Lindsay finalists, MVP, voted on by the players, were announced. And Erik Karlsson is part of that group. So if the players consider him an MVP, then we, in mostly in the media, but there's a theory going around that that fans have grabbed onto, we can get past that and support Erik Karlsson with a wonderful season, even though the San Jose Sharks were never a factor when it came to any type of playoff chase. Individual excellence. That's why they're individual awards. The trophies, we can get by that and leave the Stanley Cup and the various conference trophies for the team. I fully support Erik Karlsson winning the Norris Trophy. He's not going to win the Ted Lindsay. We know that that's Connor McDavid. And McDavid getting a little nasty in this series against Vegas. I love seeing the different side of players in a series. And there's a part of our fan base that's never seen hockey like that. Like what is coming out of Vegas and Edmonton. It's personal and it's nasty and it's mean. And you get down to the mean part and then you never know what's going to happen. And the lopsidedness of the games really plays right into that. Vegas, never won a Stanley Cup. Seattle, never won a Stanley Cup. Florida, got to a final, never won a Stanley Cup. Vegas and Florida were close early on in their franchise history. Vegas is still early on, but didn't win. So three teams out of the final eight have never won a Stanley Cup. Will we see a first-time winner this year? Or will it be somebody like Carolina? And Toronto, they've won before, but it's been 56 years since they won back in 1967. They should almost be put back into first-time winner category due to the fact that they've waited so long to finally break through. We'll find out who's in the Final Four next week when we visit with you on the Chirp Podcast with Darren Millard.